Osho, Tao, The Three Treasures, Volume 2, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
The first question. When an enlightened being dissolves into the cosmos, does his uniqueness dissolve also? The enlightened man, even while he is alive in the body, is already dissolved. He knows it, that he is no more. He knows it, that he is in nothingness. The dissolution has already happened. In fact, nothing has dissolved, because nothing has been separate from the very beginning. Separation was an illusion. The feeling that I am separate from existence is just illusory. It is not a reality. The enlightenment comes to realize only this, that he never existed before. He does not exist now. He will not exist in the future. The whole exists, not the parts. You may be thinking that you are separate, but that is just a dream. Only the dream dissolves, nothing else. Only the ignorance is the last, nothing else. Sleep dissolves, nothing else. But the question is relevant. What happens to the uniqueness of a Buddha, a Laos, a Jesus? Where it goes? Universe becomes unique through it. Every Buddha enriches the universe. Just as every sleepy man empowers it, every sleepy man is making part of the universe sleepy, dull, dead. When millions of ignorant people exist, the whole existence is sad, serious, ill. A single Buddha helps the world to flower again to its very peak, to sing again to its utmost, to dance again to its utter possibility, to bring its whole potentiality in a manifestation, in a celebration. So when a Buddha dissolves, as there is no other way to say it in language, when a Buddha dissolves, the uniqueness becomes the uniqueness of the whole. Then the whole is enriched. Then the whole will never be the same again. It has never been. That is the meaning of Christians deciding Jesus' birth as a dividing factor in history. The whole calendar of Christians or of non-Christians is based on Jesus' birthday. It is very symbolic. It says that the history will never be the same again now because Jesus is born. Because Jesus is crucified. Because Jesus has overcome death, is resurrected. Now the whole world is totally different. You may know it or you may not know it. If you were born before Jesus, you would have born in a totally different world. Jesus has given his equality to the world. It is a historic moment. Mahavira, Buddha, Lao Tse, they are all historic moments. Through them, a universe is reaching higher and higher. Universe is reaching to a crescendo. Through them, universe has already reached. Through you, it has to reach yet. Universe is a vast phenomenon. It is possible that my head had touched the roof and my feet are not at all aware about it. It is possible that the feet will take long time to recognize that the head has touched the roof and I am one body. The whole is one body. In Buddha, in Christ, in Zarathustra, something has already touched the crescendo. In you, it is lagging far behind. You have not even heard the news. You don't know what has happened. But by and by, few will escape from the prison of sleep. And then they know. One day the whole existence is going to become enlightened. Because every enlightened being goes on giving his enlightenment, the uniqueness, his flavor and fragrance to the whole. There is a beautiful story. It is a story, but very significant. It is not a fact. And in religion, we are never worried about the facts. In religion, facts are fictitious. In religion, we are worried about the significance of a fact, the value factor, not the fact itself. Hence, religion speaks in parables, stories, metaphors, analogies, allegories. It is said that when Buddha reached to the door of Nirvana, for thousands of years, the door was waiting and waiting and waiting, and the doorkeeper for him. He was coming and coming, and the news has reached. And now the Buddha had reached. The door was opened, and the doorkeeper welcomed him. But he said, close the door, because I'm not coming in. Why, asked the doorkeeper, you struggled so hard to attain it, and then you attained it. Now, why are you rejecting? The story says, Buddha said, I'm not rejecting, but I will have to wait for my other fellow travelers until and unless everyone has passed through this gate. I will have to wait. My compassion does not allow that I should go alone. It will be too selfish. And now that I don't have any self, how I can be so selfish? The story says the Buddha is still waiting for you all, fellow travelers. You may not even have heard the news that he is waiting and waiting and waiting. When everybody has passed through the gate, he is going to be the last man. The story is meaningful. How the head alone can enter if the feet have not followed? If we are an organic unity, how a part alone can enter into enlightenment, leaving all else behind? If we are a real unity, an organic unity, then of course Buddha has to wait. He may have become enlightened. He may have reached the door. But all those who are following, if they are organic unity, he has to wait. The head has reached, but for the tail, the head has to wait. When an enlightened being dissolves, he gives his fragrance to the whole of existence. You are a little more enlightened because of him. Every Buddha has added something to you. You are not alert. But every Buddha has been pouring and pouring his riches unto you. In thousands and one ways, the existence has been accumulating speed, because every Buddha gives his own achievement to it. You are totally different because of Jesus, Zarathustra Buddha. Hence the attitude of religious people towards their masters of deep gratitude. Because without a Buddha, I was not possible. Without me, you would not have been here. Without previous Buddhas, even Buddha was not possible. It is a great chain, the chain of existence. And everything is linked with everything else. It is a great pattern. Nothing is separate. Even Buddha pays his respects to the past Buddhas. Somebody asked him, why? You have become enlightened. Why do you pay respect? Nobody is higher than you to whom you are paying respect. Buddha said, because of them, I am what I am. Without them, the possibility was not there. They created the ladder. They became the rungs. I have progressed through them. They are my past. This moment of enlightenment has come because of the whole past. You are the past. Be grateful to it. You are the future also. Be hopeful about it. You are a link. In you, the whole existence passes this very moment into future. The second question, you have spoken in regards to Gurdjieff and Ouspensky about the seven types of people. You say that you are currently studying through us these seven types of men. Can you give us examples of these, their psychologies, and how you must work with us to help us attain our Buddha selves? Gurdjieff has given a beautiful classification of man. Whenever anybody will ask him about men, he will immediately stop and he will say, don't ask about men. First tell me the number. Man number one, man number two, man number three. Man number 4 or man number 5? Which man do you mean when you say man? He had 7 mans, and he is perfectly right, because nothing can be said about man, because nothing exists like man. Few are man number 1, few are man number 2, few are man number 3. These first 3 are simple to understand, because you all belong to them. The man who lives in his body is man number 1. You can find him everywhere, who lives for the body, who does not eat to survive, who survives to eat. The first number. The second number of man is emotional. He lives through his emotions, always excited or depressed, moving up and down. People come to me and ask him how things are going, and they say up and down. Number 2 man. Sometimes he feels very, very good, euphoric, and sometimes he is dull as death. Sometimes he is in the hell and sometimes in the heaven. Sometimes laughing so beautifully and sometimes crying so uglily. This second type of man also is available everywhere. You need not go very far. It may be within you. I was just reading a dictionary. I love dictionaries because I love words, their biographies. And I came across the word maudlin. That is the second type of man, emotional, always ready to weep and cry, sentimental. I looked into the etymology of the word, from where it has come, and really it was a discovery. It came from Mary Magdalene, the word maudlin. You must have seen pictures of Mary Magdalene washing Jesus' feet by her tears, crying and weeping, red eyes. Magdalene by and by became Magdalene. That is the second type of man. The third type of man is intellectual. He lives through his intellect. He is only a head. He has no body. He has no heart. He is a great controller from the head. He goes on manipulating his heart and body and everything through the head. The scholar, the ascetic, the pundit, the man of knowledge, memory, logic, philosophy. This third eye of man controls the whole world. But these are all on the same level. Their level is not different. These three types of men are everywhere available. The third type exists more as male. The second type exists more as female. The first type exists as both. And these three types are also, you cannot find them in their purity. They are mixed, hodgepodge. These three types you cannot find in purity. If you can find a man who has these three things absolutely separate, he is the fourth type of man, the yogi, the fakir, the mystic, who has separated his being into different layers. Now, when he is in the body, he is in the body. He does not allow emotions to interfere in it, or the head to control it. When he is in his emotions, he does not allow his head to interfere, or the body to interfere in it. He is not a mixture. He is not adulterated. Everything is clean and clear in him. You can rely on him. When he thinks, then he doesn't allow his emotions to interfere in it, because emotions become clouds. They don't allow a clear thinking. And that's why women cannot think as clearly as men. They belong to the second type more. They belong to Mary Magdalene. Their emotions are so much. I have never come across a woman whom I can say intelligent. Almost impossible. Because whatsoever she thinks, in fact she never thinks. It is her emotion that creates the phenomena of thinking. Deep down is emotion. She emotionalizes. And reasoning simply follows like a shadow. She is never unprejudiced. Never. She cannot be just a watcher, a judge, a spectator. No. She will get involved into it. A man can be a watcher. That's why more scientists are produced by men, more philosophers, more logicians. Except Madame Curie, women have not produced anything. And I suspect that Madame Curie must have had more male hormones than other women. Someday the study has to be done about hormones. Indira Gandhi must be having more male hormones than Morarji Desai. And one should not be deceived by the appearance. These three layers are on the same ground. They are not like stories. One top of another. There are divisions on the same plane, and they have got mixed. They have to be separated. The fourth type is the man who has separated his being, who has given to each center its own work. Otherwise, everything is intermixed and nothing functions well. Your sex center is a body center. You fall in love with a woman, you are a Brahmin, and she is a Sudra, untouchable. Because emotions don't know who is a Brahmin and who is untouchable. A Hindu can fall in love with a woman who is a Mohammedan. Now, emotions don't know, but the reason knows that this is untouchable. The body knows nothing. The emotions are not rational, but the mind reasons out. Then the mind will immediately interfere. The mind will say, look somewhere else. This woman is not for you. She is a Mohammedan and you are a Hindu. And how can you marry a Mohammedan woman? RC is so poor and you are so rich. How can you marry such a poor woman? What people will say? The head interfered in the emotion. Now you suppress it. And you try to fall in love with a woman who is a Brahmin of your own caste. Now nobody can fall in love with effort, with forced effort. It can at the most be a marriage, never a love affair. It will always be impotent. It won't have that intensity. You are continuously interfering. The body says, I am hungry, but you said this is not the time. When the body says, I am not hungry, you go on forcing food into it because you say this is lunch time and I have no other time. So this is the time and you have to eat it. Gurdjieff used to say that all these three centers are intermixed and that's why you are so confused. No clarity exists in you. Everything is a confusion and a smoke. No flame exists in you. So the first thing Gurdjieff used to do was to bring each center to its own functioning. Stop trespassing. Let the body function as the body. Let the emotion function as the emotion and let the head function as the head and don't allow them to interfere with each other. Otherwise, you will be a hodgepodge man. You won't have a center. You will live in confusion and you will die in confusion. You will be a seer vestige. The fourth type of man comes into existence when your centers start functioning in their own territory and they don't trespass. This takes long effort. Fourth type of man will be rare for you to find, but you can find in some yogis, you can find the fourth type of man. In some Sufi mystics, you can find the fourth type of man. Still, the fourth type exists. The fifth is still rarer. The fourth simply sorts out the three levels, the three layers, and makes them function to their original nature. No interference, no outside domination. The fifth man becomes aware of it. The second man can work without awareness. The second man can work through a teacher, or through a discipline, or through a methodology, how to sort them out. Much awareness is not needed. A little understanding will do. The fifth type is the man of awareness. He becomes aware of the whole phenomena. The three different centers and the fourth effort to bring them to their own territories. The fifth becomes a watcher, a witnesser. It is very rare to find a man of the fifth category. Ospensky belongs to the fifth category. Gurdjieff's greatest disciple. But he is only aware. Awareness sometimes will be there and sometimes will be lost. He cannot be constantly aware because for a constant awareness, an integrated center is needed, which is lacking in the fifth type of man. That's why Ospensky went astray. He became aware, but he had no integrated center in him. So sometimes he was aware. When he was aware, he was totally a different man. But when he was not aware, he was totally a different man. He became a good teacher, but he couldn't become a master. A master needs total awareness, 24 hours awareness, even in sleep. The sixth type of man is very, very rare. Centuries pass, then the sixth type of man becomes available. Sixth type of man is one who is not only aware, but who has become centered, who has attained to his center. Fifth type of man watches. Sixth type of man watches from an eternal center. He has attained to a tower inside. And his awareness is never wavering. His inner flame remains unwavering. And then there is the seventh type of man, about whom nothing can be said. Up to sixth description is possible. With the seventh, there is no description. You have to be near to the seventh type to know what he is. And the more you know about him, the less you will know. The more you know, the more you will feel. Much more is still left to be known. The seventh type of man is absolute mystery. Extraordinarily ordinary. Simple. But as mysterious as possible. A Buddha, a Lao Tse, a Gurdjieff, they are the seventh type of men, but about them nothing can be said. All persons who belong to the fourth category will be more or less alike. People who belong to the first three categories are almost alike. People who belong to the fourth category will be different from the first three categories, but they will not be very much different from each other belonging to the same category, the fourth category. Yogis, fakirs, very different from the third, from the three categories, but very similar to themselves. The man of fifth category starts becoming unique, becomes something rare. Two persons of the fifth category, you will find them as different as possible. The sixth type of person is absolutely integrated. He has become absolutely unique. And with the seventh, the whole, the all possibilities of uniqueness have been achieved. It is the highest peak, indefinable, unknowable through the intellect. There is only one way, Hindus call it satsang, to know the seventh type. It is just to be in the presence of that type of man. If you are fortunate to find a seventh type of man, just allow his being to penetrate your being. Become receiving ends. And then you will have to come to a feel what it is. It is the greatest diamond of being in the world. Third question, I wonder about colors, no beginning, no end, but emptiness. What about orange, the color of the sun and the sannyasins? Sannyas is the ultimate game, the last, the final. Beyond it, then there is no game. It had to be very colorful. The householder, the grihast, plays a game, but it is in black and white, poor. A sannyasin is playing the game, not in black and white, it is colorful. A sannyasin has to become a rainbow. Because the moment you know that everything is empty, everything becomes possible. Because that emptiness has in it all. To me, sannyas is not a renunciation against indulgence. No. It is renunciation in indulgence. Sannyas is not leaving the world, but living in the world as if you are out of it. It is a as if phenomena. You live in the world and you are not in it. You move in the world and never you have taken a single step in it. You remain in the world, but you don't allow the world to enter in you. Hindus call it the phenomena of the lotus. The lotus remains in water but untouched. In the morning, go and see the lotus. In the night, dewdrops have gathered on the petals. They look so beautiful in the morning sun. Pearls. But you can watch and see. They are on the petals. And they are not, because they never touch the petal anywhere. So close and so far away, touching and not touching, just a little breeze and the drop. The petals does not cling to them, they cannot cling to the petals. A sannyasin lives like a lotus in the world. He does not cling to anything. He has no clinging. He enjoys. In fact, only he enjoys. Only he can enjoy. Because without any burden of desires, without any obsessions to cling, now there is no hindrance. He can celebrate, he can delight, he can dance. His rejoicing is unconditional. That's why I call sannyas the last game. On the periphery, it may look serious. At the center, it is a deep laughter. My sannyasins are not serious people. Not that they are not sincere. In fact, a sincere person is never serious. Seriousness is a deceptive thing. Seriousness gives you the feeling of sincerity, which is not there. A sincere person can laugh and remain sincere. A serious person cannot laugh, because if he laughs, the seriousness is broken. Sincerity is never broken. It is authentic. Seriousness is just a facet, a mask. My sannyasins are not serious. That is the whole point to be understood. All other types of sannyasins are serious. They don't have a laughter within them. They are afraid of the world. In fact, they are cowards, escapists. If really the world is an illusion, then why escape from it? If in fact you have realized that the whole world is Maya, then where are you going and for what? Nobody ever renounces dreams. How can you renounce something which is not? When you renounce the world, you are too much in its reality. You may call it Maya, illusion, but you don't understand what you are saying. You call it illusion just to console yourself that you have not left a reality, it was illusion. But these consolations won't do. You know it is real. Otherwise, why you have left it? To me, sannyas is an awakening, not an escape. It is awareness of the whole phenomena of life, that it is a game. If it is a game, play it well, that's all. And play it beautifully, and while it lasts, enjoy it. Don't cling to it because it is a game. Don't get mad into it because it is a game. When you understand that it is a game, why not let it be colorful? And red is a basic color. In nature, only two colors exist, red and green. They are the basic colors. Hindus have chosen red, Mohammedans have chosen green. Only two basic colors exist. All the trees are green and all the flowers red. When I was thinking what color I am going to give to my sannyasins, green was also a competitor. Green was also a candidate. But then I decided for red. Because in the red, the green is involved. But in the green, the red is not involved. I will have to explain to you. A tree can be without flowers, but flowers cannot be without trees. In every flower, the whole tree is involved. So behind my red, there is green. Behind my all teachings, the formulation may be Hindu, but the Mohammedan is hidden. So I talk about Upanishads, and I give examples from Sufis. I give you a meditation, three steps of the meditation come from the Hindu world, one step from the Mohammedan world also. I give you the mantra, who is just the last part of Allah. If you repeat Allah, 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 Allah continuously, you will start repeating Allah, Allah, Allah. Then the Allah part drops by and by. just remains the sound of whoo, 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 and the whole being is filled with it. I had chosen red because red is the culmination of the whole tree, and because red is the flowering, the last thing. You cannot defeat Hindus. And of course, they were first in the world of religion. They have chosen the best. They have not left anything. They have chosen the color red. Red is the flower. Red is the blood. Red is the sun. From everywhere red surrounds you. And in red everything is implied, involved, because it is the flowering. Let your life be colorful. I don't want you to become colorless. No. I would like you to become like rainbows, all the seven colors. And when all the seven colors are there, there comes a moment when they meet and become one. That is white light. This is a miracle, that the white light can be divided in seven colors, and the seven colors of a rainbow, if they meet together, if the alchemy happens, they become white. When all the seven colors meet, they become white. And when all the seven types of men meet, they become white. Just a white light. And nothing is left. Play the game as beautifully as you can. It is a game. Don't get serious into it. And even sometimes seriousness is needed, let it be a game, nothing more. Sometimes it is needed. It gives a taste to life. Sometimes you need to be serious also. Be serious, but never become serious. Let that too also be a game. Let everything be a game. And sannyas is the last game. Beyond it, the whole world of game disappears. Then there is reality. So this is just the last thing you are going to do. Do it as perfectly as possible. Delight in it. Dance in it. Let it be a deep singing, a rejoicing. The fourth question. Over the years, I had a long love affair with a drum and have met so many brothers and sisters who have fallen into meditation through drums. Why do dancers love drums? In the No drama of Japan, there is a story about a drum. Would you illuminate this little play? Almost 2,000 years ago in China, a woman dreamed that a wonderful drum fell from heaven. That night she conceived. She bore a son and named him Tenko. It means a heavenly drum. Some years later, a drum did fall from heaven, and whenever Tenko bat upon it, it made beautiful music. The emperor demanded the drum, but Tenko took it into the forest and hid. He was captured and drowned. The drum was taken to the emperor's palace, but it made no sound. Tenko's father came to the palace and touched the drum, and it sang again. The emperor repented and granted a memorial service for the son. Tenko's spirit appears and dances in gratitude for their prayers. The drum has a special appeal. The reason is very deep-rooted. You will have to understand it. A child is conceived in the womb. The child grows, but the child cannot breathe. He has to breathe from the mother. In fact, the mother breathes for him. And for 9 months continuously, he hears the beating of the mother's heart. Continuously. It is the first meeting with music and rhythm. For 9 months, the child goes on hearing the heartbeat of the mother. That is the first drum one encounters. And it becomes so deep-rooted in the being of the child. Every pore of it is filled with it. Every fiber of his body vibrates with it. He has no life except the mother's heart and the beating continuously for 9 months. You just think about it. And then the child is born. The whole body system, the mind system, carries that desire for the beat, for the rhythm of the mother's heart. And mothers know, knowingly, unknowingly, whenever a child is restless, crying, weeping, uncontrollable, they will just put his head on their chest. And immediately, the child goes to sleep, falls into sleep. Again he hears the beat. The beat is soporific. Immediately he falls. And that is not only with a small child. Even a young man, when he rests on her woman's heart, immediately falls into sleep. Again, the woman becomes the mother. The lover, the husband becomes a child. The heart goes on having the appeal. You just listen. If you don't feel that sleep is coming, just close your eyes, put the light off, and listen to the clock. Tick, 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 and that will do. No tranquilizer is needed. Because it almost gives you the feeling of the mother's heart. A closed room, a closed womb, and then the tick, tick of a clock. And always choose a clock which really gives a hearty feeling, not a metallic sound, but more human. Old grandpa clocks used to be that way. Now we have more efficient clocks, but less human. Old grandpa clocks on the walls were something beautiful. They create an atmosphere. And hence, from this deep biological experience of the child, drum has an appeal. Drum is the oldest instrument of music. Everything else has followed it. So whenever somebody is beating a drum, the temptation is too much. You start moving your legs. You start swaying your body. If the beater is good and really knows how to create atmosphere through the drum beat, nobody can be there who is not affected. Even a Buddha would like to dance. It is natural. That's why everybody enjoys drum beat, and it is very primitive. It is not sophisticated. Go into the jungles of Africa or in the Indian deep forests where only aboriginals live, you will find everywhere the drum. Drum is the most primitive instrument. When you feel that the drum is beating and your body responds, sways, you start falling into the beat, with the beat, suddenly you have become a primitive, a natural being. All civilization dropped. You are no more here in this 20th century. And all the nonsense that goes around, you have moved almost 10,000 years back. Just the other night, our Ethiopian sannyasi Neeraj came to show me few Ethiopian dances. They were wonderful. He danced with a very primitive beat, very, very primitive. Ethiopia is one of the oldest lands on earth. It is the country of Solomon. Since Solomon, they have been dancing. And with the primitive beat, it has a deep appeal. No need to understand it. Your body understands it. Nobody could understand the song that was following the beat, but everybody understood the beat. There were Americans, there were English, there were Indians. Everybody could follow it. The language of the drum is universal. It is very unsophisticated, simple. Nothing much to it. Anybody can learn it. In fact, everybody drums. Knowingly, unknowingly, you are sitting on a table and you start beating. If you feel good, you start beating the table. It is primordial. Your natural being is called again. It responds. All the centuries of civilization disappear in a second. Suddenly you are again under the stars. 1,000 years back you have moved. Everything is natural, dark, mysterious. That is the appeal. And the man who does not respond to a drum and its beat has no heart. He lacks something. He has become completely plastic. A 20th century model, absolutely. He has lost all contact with the history, with the past, with the millennia that has passed. In his heart, nothing of the nature lives anymore. It is dead. And the story is also very, very beautiful. Almost 2,000 years ago in China, a woman dreamed that a wonderful dream fell from heaven. Of course, how man can invent the drum? Such a beautiful phenomena, like drum. And it has been so long on the earth that nobody can visualize that ever there was a time when man was and the drum was not. So God must have created them simultaneously. It is possible that he may have created drum first and then man, because immediately the man will need the beat, the vibration of it. Otherwise, how he will be alive? Every child comes late. The mother's heart is beating first. The heart is ready to beat and flow with love. And then comes the child. The drums must have been in existence before man was created. It is not said so in the Christian story of the creation of the world, because the story is not complete. No story can ever be complete. The story of the creation is going to be as vast as creation itself. The story is symbolic. It says, in China, a woman dreamed that a wonderful drum fell from heaven. Good. Perfectly true. Man cannot make the drum. It is biological, the beat. It precedes man. That night she conceived. Now absolutely clear is the path of the story, how it is going. First she dreamt that a drum is going to fall from heaven, and then she conceived. She bore a son and named him Tenko, heavenly drum. Some years later, a drum did fall from heaven, and whenever Tenko bat upon it, it made beautiful music. Man is from heaven, and the drum is from heaven. The meaning is symbolic. Man is from heaven and the music is from heaven. And whenever you know the keys how to open the doors of music, you have opened the doors of heaven also. The secret lies in the music. If you ask me, if there is a choice, that between philosophy, religion, science, music, if there is a choice for me to choose one and all the remaining ones will disappear from the earth, I will choose music. Because if music is there, religion will follow. It cannot disappear. How it is possible if the music is there, how religion can disappear? The music will give such a mysterious feeling to everybody, then people will start thinking about what this mystery is. If music is, philosophy cannot disappear. If music is, science cannot disappear. If music is, literature cannot disappear. But it is possible. Philosophy can be there. There is no need for music. If you choose philosophy, then philosophy will be there. But there is no necessity for music to be there. Music is the most primordial phenomena. Because it is in the nature, breeze passing through the trees and birds singing. You can never find a bird as a philosopher, but all birds are musicians. You go and search, you will not find a stream religious, but all streams are musical. Go and ask these winds passing through the trees. They may not have heard ever about Bible and Quran and Gita, but they know music. Music is involved in life itself. It is existential. So if the choice is for me to choose, I will choose music and drop all, because I know they will have to come back. Music is so vast, it will create them all again. Music is heavenly. She bore a son and named him Tenko, heavenly drum. Some years later, a drum did fall from heaven, and whenever Tenko bat upon it, it made beautiful music. If you really want to enter into music, you have to go as deep as the music is. Music is the greatest mystic discipline. Islam has denied music completely. And that's why Islam has remained a crippled religion. How can there be a religion without music? It will be very poor. Sufis again revived it. They had to revive it. That's why Islam always feels an antagonism, deep antagonistic attitude towards Sufis, because they again revived music and Islam has completely denied it. There is a story, it happened. One of the Mughal emperors, Aurangzeb, he was a very orthodox, fanatic orthodox Mohammedan. He was very much against music. He was so much so against that in the capital, music started dying. People were afraid to sing or to dance or to play on instruments because it was a crime. He prohibited it by law. One day, all the musicians of the capital gathered together and they created a protest march. They followed a arthi. When a man dies in India, the man is bound on bamboos, the dead body, that is called arthi. And then it is carried to the cemetery. So they carried the arthi of music to the cemetery. A great procession, because the capital was filled with musicians. They're all weeping and crying. And they created so much noise that Aurangzeb came out of his palace to see what is the matter, who has died. And thousands of people, musicians and their lovers, their disciples. And in Delhi in those days, it was a great phenomena. Music was a great phenomena. They all followed, weeping, crying. Who has died? Somebody very, very important. And I have never heard. Aurangzeb came out and he asked, what is the matter? Who has died? The musician said, sir, music. Aurangzeb said, good. It is good that music is dead. Now go and bury him so deep that he cannot revive again. This has been the Muslim attitude. Sufis revived dancing and music and everything again, because no religion can be without music. Mohammedans feel deeply hurt by the fact. They suspect that Sufis are somehow enemies. They tried to kill Sufis, but they could not. And this is the irony. that Sufis are the real core of Islam. They are the substantial religion. In fact, they are the flowering. Music is a milieu in which religion arises and develops and grows. Anything that is growing needs music. Your all prayers should be musical. Your meditations should be musical. Your whole being should be combined by musical. The emperor demanded the drum, but Tenko took it into the forest and hid. He was captured and drowned. The drum was taken to the emperor's palace, but it made no sound. Drum in itself will not make any sound. Drum in itself is nothing. An alive heart has to be brought to it. A loving heart has to be brought to it. You have to put life into it. You have to get involved into it. Only then it makes sound. That sound is the meeting of the man with the drum. The sound is not possible only by the drum. It is not a technical thing. The king could have called technicians, but music is a love affair. It is not technology. You can learn the technique and you can miss the music. If you love, you may not know the technique. You need not worry about it, but the music will come. Life responds love. God responds love. And whenever you become technical, you miss life, you miss God, you miss all that is beautiful. Of course, it was an emperor's court. There must have been technicians. But you cannot capture the citadel of music by violence. You cannot be aggressive on truth, on love. You cannot make an attack on God's house. No. Then you will miss. You have to go surrendered. You have to go there humble. The emperor demanded the drum, but Tenko took it into the forest and hid. He was captured and drowned. The drum was taken to the emperor's palace, but it made no sound. A deep love is needed. You may have seen Indian musicians. Before they start playing on their instruments, they will bow down to them. It looks absurd into Western eyes. What are you doing? Bowing down to your own instrument? It is sacred. It is divine. You have to take the permission. That do you allow me to play on you? Am I accepted? I have heard about one musician who will ask actually his veena, am I allowed? And then wait. And sometimes it will happen, he will say, no, the veena is not ready. I am not pure enough in this moment. I will have to wait. Today I cannot play. It will be difficult for the Western mind to understand. What are you saying? A veena is an instrument. There is no need to ask. You can force, you can command. But there you miss. You can force, And there will be a certain kind of music, but it will not be a response, it will be a reaction. If you hit the veena, there will be a reaction, of course, but it will not be a response. A reaction is like raping a woman. Response is like being responded by your beloved. They are totally different. Tenko's father came to the palace and touched the drum and it sang. The emperor repented and granted a memorial service for the son. Tenko's spirit appears and dances in gratitude for their prayers. Everybody who has been violent with life will repent. Don't be violent with life. Persuade it. Persuasion is needed. Don't be aggressive and violent. Otherwise, all music disappears. I will tell you one story. It happened in a house. There was a very ancient veena. For centuries it has been there. And the people of the family, through generations by and by, had completely forgotten for what it exists, what its function is. It had become a nuisance in the house. It was so big and it needed a space. And not only that, sometimes children will go and play with it and they will disturb the peace of the whole house. Sometimes in the night the cat will jump on it. Other rats will run through it. And it was a nuisance. Always noise creating. Disturbing in the sleep, disturbing people of the house and the neighbors. Finally, when they decided why we are keeping it here, throw it out. Every day we have to dust and clean it, and it is useless. They went and threw it outside the house. A beggar passed. He saw the veena lying there. He started playing on it. It created such a divine music that the whole neighborhood gathered. Even those people who had thrown it, they came running out of their house. They were stupefied, hypnotized. They couldn't believe that this veena can create such beautiful music, so mysterious. It created the milieu around, that the whole traffic stopped. Houses were empty. Whosoever heard, they came. The whole town gathered. And when the beggar stopped, the people to whom the veena belonged for centuries jumped on the beggar and they said, "Give this veena to us. This is ours." The beggar said, "The veena belongs to one who can play on it. It is not a possession, it is a love. If you can play on it, then it belongs to you. If you cannot play on it, don't be possessive. It belongs to me. I was waiting for it and the veena was waiting for me. Now we have met, now nobody can separate us. If you insist, you can take it, but that will be a dead veena. And I will be a dead musician. Between us two, something meets and mingles. Between us two, something becomes one and organic. I am half, the veena is half. When we meet, we become one. There is music, and there is love, and there is life." The last question. I often feel energy running through me It is as apparent when I am in the West. I often feel your energy running through me. It is as apparent when I am in the West as when I am back in India. Yet when I am here, I wonder whether the feeling that you have been with me is my imagination or not. If it is your imagination, so what? Why not enjoy it? What is wrong in imagination? Imagination is as divine and is as anything else. If you feel happy and blissful, enjoy it. Let it be there. This is the mind who goes on creating trouble. People again and again ask me if they feel good, if they felt beautiful, they come and ask. We are worried. Maybe it is just imagination. But when they are suffering and when they are in pain, they never come to me and ask that maybe it is just imagination that we are suffering. This is beautiful. You are so addicted with suffering. Suffering is always real. Bliss, suspicious. Maybe imagination. So what? If it is an imagination, let it be an imagination. Enjoy it. Delight in it. And always remember that the criterion for the true is delight, celebration. There exists no other criterion for me for the truth. A thing that gives you peace, a thing that gives you bliss is real. A thing that gives you pain, makes you suffer, is unreal. That is the only criterion. There is no other criterion. So if you are feeling happy, don't get disturbed by the mind. Mind is a great poisoner. It immediately creates suspicion that there is something wrong. You and happy, impossible, the mind says to you. It must be unreal. You have lived in so much suffering for so long that suffering seems to be real. When you are in suffering, there is no doubt. You take it for granted. It is real. When you feel blissful, immediately suspicion arises. How? You? And happy? Impossible. Something has gone wrong somewhere. Enough for today.